Would the House please come to order? Would members please indicate their presence by voting? Would the clerk please lock the roll? Madam Clerk.
26 members present.
We do have a quorum. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Cott be excused from the call of the House today from 10 a.m. until 9:34 p.m. plain time, January 17th. And Mr. Speaker, Representatives Barnes, Cott, Murkowski, Roethberger, and Sanders, excuse the Cott portion, have been excused from the call of the House today.
Without objection. A member will be excused and the others will be indicated as previously authorized. We have rounding out his week with us today, Pastor Greg Lindsay of the Northern Light United Church. Would members please rise for the invocation?
In deepest respect for the religious practices of each person here, let us take a moment for spiritual reflection. Let us pray. God of many names, gathered into one, you have created everything and called it good. In this time that you have given us to serve, may we seek to become the very best that you have created us to be. May we seek to bring out the best in each one of our colleagues. Give us the confidence to know that we will be more effective together than we could ever hope to be alone. And may we keep ever before us those who are most in need. Empower us, O God, to empower them. Amen.
Amen. Pastor, thank you for being with us. Representative Jewell, would you please lead us in a pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Davies.
Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent that the prayer be spread upon the journal.
Without objection, that prayer will be spread across the journal. Would the clerk please certify the journal for the previous legislative day?
I certify the correctness of the journal for the third and fourth legislative days in House and Senate Joint Journal Supplement Number 8.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journal is certified by the Chief Clerk be approved.
Without objection, the journal is certified. I have a guest this morning for introduction, Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. I have seven sons, and I have three of them here today. Ramsey is 12, and Nathan is 14, and Neil is my oldest. He's the vice president of my native corporation in Nome. If you'll help me welcome them here to Juneau.
Any other guests for introduction? Do we have messages from the governor?
I have no messages from the governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the other body?
A message dated January 13th stating the Senate accepts the House invitation to meet in joint session on March the 8th at 11 a.m. for the purpose of hearing the State of the Judiciary message from Chief Justice Warren Matthews. And a message dated January 13th stating the Senate has passed committee substitute for Senate Bill 162 Judiciary by the Senate Judiciary Committee entitled An Act Relating to the Rule Against Perpetuities, Non-Vested Property Interests, and Powers of Appointment and Providing for an Effective Date.
Judiciary having had all they can do with the rule of perpetuity, that will go directly to rules.
I have no further messages from the other body.
Do we have communications?
We received the comprehensive annual financial report from the state of Alaska from the Department of Administration. I have no further communications.
Reports of standing committees?
There are no standing committee reports.
Reports of special committees?
There are no special committee reports.
Introduction of resolutions or citations?
House Joint Resolution Number 44. By Representative Ogun relating to mandates and other conditions imposed on the states by the federal government.
Will be referred to the House Special Committee on World Trade and State Federal Relations and Resources.
I have no further citations or resolutions for introduction.
Do we have bills for introduction?
House Bill 285, of the House Rules Committee by request of the governor entitled An Act Making and Amending Appropriations for the Operating and Loan Program Expenses of State Government for Certain Programs and to Capitalize Funds Making Appropriations under Article 9, Section 17C, Constitution of the State of Alaska from the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund and Providing for an Effective Date. A letter was attached.
Will be referred to Committee on Regional Affairs, State Affairs, Judiciary. No, I'm just kidding. That'll go to Finance.
House Bill 286, by the House Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, entitled An Act Making Appropriations for the Operating and Capital Expenses of the State's Integrated Comprehensive Mental Health Program and Providing for an Effective Date. Two letters, one from the Governor and one from OMB, and FY 2001 budget recommendations were attached.
And also will go to Finance.
House Bill 287, by the House Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, entitled An Act Making and Amending Capital Appropriations and Reappropriations and Capitalizing Funds and Providing for an Effective Date.
That too will go to the Finance Committee.
House Bill 288, by Representative Cott, entitled An Act Relating to the Creation of an Aggravating Factor for the Commission of Domestic Violence in the Physical Presence of a Child.
Will be referred to the HES Committee and Judiciary.
House Bill 289, by Representative Harris, entitled An Act Relating to Transportation of Members of the Alaska National Guard to the Alaska Naval Militia and Alaska State Defense Force by the Alaska Marine Highway System and the Alaska Railroad and Relating to the Alaska State Defense Force.
Will be referred to the Military and Veterans Affairs Committee, Transportation and Finance.
House Bill 290 by the House Resources Committee, entitled An Act Relating to Stranded Gas Pipeline Carriers and to the Intrastate Regulation by the Regulatory Commission of Alaska Pipelines and Pipeline Facilities of Stranded Gas Pipeline Carriers.
Will be referred to the Oil and Gas Committee, Resources and Finance.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Brings us to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the first item on today's agenda?
There are citations on today's calendar.
Ms. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the citations on today's calendar be approved.
Without objection, the citations on today's calendar are approved. Brings us to unfinished business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the following representatives be excused from the call of the House in the following times. Representative Masick from 1:35 p.m. January 14th until 9:32 p.m. Plain Time January 18th. Representative Cisna from 7:15 a.m. January 15th until 9:32 p.m. Plain Time January 17th. Representative Ogun from 7 a.m. January 20th until 3:45 a.m. Ferry Time January 24th. Representative James from 8:57 a.m. February 1st until 9:32 p.m. Plain Time February 1st. Representative Porter from 1:35 p.m. February 11th until 9:31 a.m. Plain Time February 15th. Representative Cott from 7:15 a.m. February 11th until 9:34 p.m. Plain Time February 15th. Representative McCaskey from 1:35 p.m. February 11th until 9:31 a.m. Plain Time February 15th. Representative Green's previously excused absence from 7 a.m. February 12th to 9 p.m. February 14th be amended to 7:15 a.m. February 11th until 9:34 p.m. Plain Time February 14th. And with that, Mr. Speaker, there are no other excused absence.
Brevities. For the information of the body, there were no citations for introduction today. That's why there isn't any form. Any other items of unfinished business? Committee announcements? Other announcements? Special orders? Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On request to leave the body for a special order on hunger strikes and federal mandates.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Notice that a Juneau resident is having a hunger strike. I think she strung a net across the front of the Capitol opening day of the legislature or something, some time about there. But anyway, the issue that she's having a hunger strike about is the fact that as a urban native, she's unable to subsistence fish. And, you know, I wish her well. I guess if we were able to come up with a solution, and I think one that I've been supporting for quite a while, a constitutional amendment that enshrines subsistence as the highest preference
that she would be able to subsistence fish as an urban resident. And I think it just points out the problem with the federal law, the fact that someone who has a deep spiritual, cultural connectiveness to a subsistence activity is barred because of where she lives from participating in that. And on federal mandates, I would bring to your attention the fact that I introduced House Joint Resolution 44. This is almost verbatim, with exception of a half a sentence, to a resolution I introduced 5 years ago. It was HJR 8, when my first year in the legislature, which, by the way, you were a co-sponsor of as a judiciary chairman, and I would invite you to co-sponsor it again, Mr. Speaker, and anyone else that would like to take a look at that, I would welcome it. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Logan. Any other special orders? Representative Kemplin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I request permission to speak on legislative majorities and hidden agendas.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, over the interim, you may have read a series of opinion pieces by the conservative economist David Reun. He conducted an analysis of Alaska's economy and came up with some very interesting facts. The data he presents seems to correlate with the economic policy set by the legislative majority. This is the same legislative majority that has focused on reducing government so that the private sector can work its magic and produce economic prosperity for Alaskans. The Cato Institute, a conservative think tank, reported in May of 1999 that Alaska ranked dead last in state expenditure increases from 1990 to 1997. Alaska is the only state with an actual decline of 0.6% in government expenditures. The legislative majority has been successful in reducing public investment in Alaska. So, has the reduction in state government spending by the legislative majority produced economic prosperity in Alaska? Well, according to Mr. Reun, between 1992 and 1997, real gross state product in Alaska dropped at an annual average rate of 0.7%. Gross state product is the aggregate total economic activity in the state. Productivity, which is a measurement of gross state product, has been dropping 2.3% per year. So Alaska may have more workers employed today than 15 years ago, but those workers are producing less each year. In other words, Mr. Speaker, despite the growth in the size of the permanent fund and the continued upward trend in total employment, Alaskans are growing poorer relative to the rest of the nation. Mr. Speaker, I'm afraid the facts don't get any prettier. The facts point to, one, a lethargic onshore seafood processing industry, two, the virtual elimination of timber harvesting, three, the inconsistent production of hard rock mining, four, the fact that Alaska still receives half as many visitors per year as Yellowstone National Park. These industries show that Alaska has made little or no investment in its future. The majority continues to deregulate, privatize, and cut the budget. So, what can Alaska be proud of in the past 5 years? Greater employment, Mr. Speaker. Virtually all of the increases in Alaska employment over the past 15 years have been in retail and services. The annual income for retail workers, $19,044. Service workers, $26,352. Mr. Speaker, the federal poverty level for a family of four is $20,880. The bottom line is that a declining Alaskan productivity means declining family income. If the downtrend in new investment continues at the current rate of decline, Alaska's per capita income will fall into the lowest 25% in the next 10 years. Alaska has gone from the highest per capita personal income in the country to a position below the national average. Surprisingly, Alaska's economic decline occurred in the non-petroleum sector. So Alaska's dismal performance cannot be written off to falling oil prices and decreasing oil production. Continued net disinvestment in Alaska will mean that wages and household incomes will continue their slide downward. Is an Alaska an attractive place to do business when a state disinvests in its economy? Mr. Speaker, it seems Alaska is barely keeping afloat in a world of new business and economic growth. While the national average gross state product has grown at a rate of 3.1% per year, Alaska's gross state product has declined an average of 0.4% per year. So where is Alaska's financial welcome mat for new business that's been touted so much by the legislative majority? The economic policies practiced by the legislative majority benefit the wealthy and that multinational corporations at the expense of mom and pop Alaskans. Is this the majority's definition of economic prosperity? Mr. Speaker, these economic policies do not create wages that families can live on. Did you know that Alaska, in some analyses, ranks near the bottom among the 50 states in business vitality and development capacity? Mr. Reun further adds that businesses in the Northwest are beginning to view Alaska as the Appalachia of the North. Alaska's future lies in its ability to attract new industry associated with America's transformation into the new economy. Mr. Speaker, if you were a CEO of a high-tech business, would you move your company to a state that reduced its university purchasing power by 30%? Would you relocate to a state that is suffering the loss of a generation of brain drain due to penny-wise and pound-foolish policies? Mr. Speaker, the best and the brightest are not attracted to places with substandard public services and a deadpan economy. Mr. Speaker, does the legislative majority have a hidden agenda? Will Alaskans in the Alaska economy benefit from a dumbed-down and poor citizenry? By reducing the budget, by disinvesting in Alaska, and preventing Alaska from participating in the new economy, the legislative majority appears to have a hidden agenda, Mr. Speaker. Is the legislative majority trying to turn Alaska into the Appalachia of the North? Mr. Speaker, I hope this is not the case.
Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to speak on economics?
Without objection.
Yeah, thank you. Mr. Speaker, the previous speaker mentioned a local economist, Mr. Reum, a number of times, and there's a danger of only quoting part, I think, of what information is provided us. Certainly he did mention, Mr. Reum mentioned Appalachia of the North, and I think that it should be a concern for all of us. It may well be that money put into private hands would protect us from becoming an Appalachia of the North rather than taking money from citizens via taxes. That, in my opinion, may or may not be shared by Mr. Reum, but I remember reading from Mr. Reum, and he also added that a great contributor to Alaska's financial problems is the selfish, short-sighted, personal interest that many Alaskans have shown in being concerned about what the size of their personal permanent fund dividend check is and not what the greater needs of Alaska's economy are. If we're going to quote Mr. Reum and have doom and gloom. I think then we should quote him also and share the responsibility that he views for our financial problems with citizens who are more concerned about their next dividend than the next generation.
Representative Bundy, Representative Mulder.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to speak on the same subject.
Without objection.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I found it interesting, the comments from the representative, the prepared comments, or maybe I should just call it lengthy speech, that was given by the representative from downtown, where he seemed to take issue with the points made by the administration or the governor the other night. I seem to remember some sort of quote given by the governor, the state of the state is very healthy. Seems to be in direct conflict with the comments given by the previous speaker, and perhaps he should have some conversation with his governor. Second point I'd like to respond to, Mr. Speaker, is this assertion that somehow we in the legislature create jobs. Mr. Speaker, we don't create jobs. We take the hindrances off of private sector and allow them to create jobs. It's not the legislature, it's not the government, it's not the royal government. Sure, I can guarantee you, Mr. Speaker, we'd swelled state rolls to 25, 30, 40,000 people and paid them all $60,000, our annual average income in the state would have swelled. It would have grown. It would have looked really good. But I would conjecture to you also, Mr. Speaker, it would be a very sick state that would be dying on the vine and that no private industry would look to be investing in this state. I guess the only point, Mr. Speaker, that I found interesting from the comments made by the member from Mountain View was the real question about why aren't businesses investing in Alaska. That, I think, was the point of Mr. Rayon, because I read those comments too, and ones that I found very troubling, because I'm not sure there's a simple answer to that question. Certainly the price of commodities has influenced why private sectors aren't investing adequate amounts of money to have a grow economy in Alaska. Mineral prices are down. That's been a challenge. Timber, obviously we know all the products with the timber industry in Alaska, the environmental concerns, the lack of contracts. That has reduced investment. Certainly the fluctuating price of oil, with five oil rigs operating on the slope, that has diminished investment in Alaska. The oil industry has not been up here as much as they should, and we've certainly worked as a legislature to remove the barriers to encourage, and working with the administration, I might add, to remove the barriers to encourage additional investment by the oil industry in Alaska. What other barriers are out there, Mr. Speaker? I think if you talk to a number of businesses candidly, which I have over the past few years, you find several reasons why they've not invested in Alaska. First and foremost in my mind is the ability to have a long-range financial plan. It's a very, very big concern. And I'm proud of the fact, Mr. Speaker, that in a bipartisan manner, working with the administration last year, we did put forth a plan. Now, that plan was rejected, but it was an effort that was put forward. I commit to you, Mr. Speaker, that what we were criticized for last year, I'm going to do this year. I'm going to do a lot more listening to the Alaska public, but continue work to try and develop a long-range plan. It might not be developed this year, but we're going to continue listening and working and thinking about it because it is something that needs to happen. I think that is the single largest deterrent toward investment in Alaska. The second point, Mr. Speaker, is the while the administration, as a governor, may hang out a welcome sign to work with the state, I think there's some state agencies that's only a facade. I think you're finding some industries finding it very difficult to work with state agency with the regulations that exist. And I think we as a legislature, as individual legislators, as subcommittees, have been working to try and diminish those barriers where we can find them, to work out the differences, to reinstate that welcome sign for businesses in Alaska. So, Mr. Speaker, in wrap up, I would say that the state of Alaska is not bad. We've got untold resources. We've got huge reserves in terms of cash balances in our savings accounts. We have many options before us. We have the least taxed population in the United States. That is to our credit, Mr. Speaker. That is to our credit, because the single biggest asset you can give to a business is to have a good workforce, and a good workforce is dependent or really is driven by the fact that they get to take more of their take-home pay and keep it in their pocket. So that's a true asset that we provide to employers. So we are a healthy state. Certainly it concerns me we're not seeing the reinvestment in the state that we should. And I think that is a real wake-up call that we all have to pay attention to and work on. And I'm committed, Mr. Speaker, to doing that. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Mulder. Representative Alcro.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Permission to speak on the same subject?
Without objection.
Mr. Speaker, less than 48 hours ago, the governor stood not 20 feet from me and said, and I quote, "The state of the state is strong." Last year, Alaskans earned a record $9.1 billion. Unemployment is at its lowest rate. Welfare rolls have dropped dramatically the last 5 years. Violent crime is down. He even mentioned that mining, in a day and age where mineral resource prices are severely depressed, mining is a shining star in this state. So I'm a little bit confused with my colleague's prior comments about how bad the situation is. If record employment, record wages, low crime, and low welfare rolls are a hidden agenda, Mr. Speaker, I will embrace that agenda any day of the week. Thank you.
Representative Alcro. Representative James.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Respect to speak on the same subject.
Without objection.
You know, we can't, in a few minutes, in special orders in this House, get to the bottom of economics in Alaska. But I think, and anyone can put statistics to make any point that they want to make. And although the facts are true, there are extending circumstances about that. I'd just like to reinforce some of the statements that have previously been spoken by other people. One of the biggest deterrents that you have to a good economy is an unstable environment. And I can tell you that a budget gap of 300 to 500 or 800 million is certainly no stability in what the future of this state has. And we must work on a long-term solution to that. And I've maintained since the very beginning that it takes three particular issues. It takes continuing to reduce the spending that we have, or to make our spending more efficient in the long run, to implement some taxes, broad-based, that are where people are willing to pay some amount to take care, to provide the services that they want, and some use of some of the earnings of the permanent fund. And if we can get together on the methods of doing that, I believe we can put together a long-range plan that the public will accept, because it will be fair, reasonable, and effective. The other comment that I wanted to make is that we are part of a larger whole, and that there is a trend in this nation for service industry jobs, and you might hear the low unemployment at the national level. And the more jobs that are created, and you've probably heard these people speaking up, yes, there's more jobs. I have three of them. Certainly, there is a general trend for lower wages in some sectors, and high giveaway wages at the top of the corporate ladder, which are completely out of perspective with what some of the rest of us work for. But we're opening up to global economy, and that's the result of that. And quite frankly, the result of the late economic boom in this nation is a result of the Reagan years with supply-side economics. That's how it works. And there is a rule of thumb that when the interest rate goes down, the economy goes up. There's a kind of an 18-month delay there. And so when we had double-digit interest rates in the Jimmy Carter administration, and then those went down, we were prompted to have anywhere from 10 to 20, 25 years of economic good times. We're in the center of that now. Eventually, the bubble may burst. I'm hoping that it never does, but it probably will, and I don't personally see that happening in the very near future. But if we're going to be part of a different economy in Alaska, the kind of economy Alaska needs, because we are separated from the lower 48. We have a different climatical situation and so forth. We got to build our own. We can't necessarily count on those outside. And for that, I am bringing the interest of a railroad connection between Canada to Alaska to open up some of our lands in a very environmentally sound way, so that we can move on into this next millennium with good economy in Alaska.
Thank you, Representative James. Representative Sisson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'd like permission to speak on the same subject, please.
Without objection.
Thank you. I find myself in agreement with many of the people who have spoken today on the future. And we did, as a matter of fact, listen to the governor. The governor, of course, is an administrator. He gives us a picture, a snapshot of right now. And fortunately, right now, we're doing well. However, our job here is to be forward-looking, and that's part of the job that we have as representatives. And our representative from District 16, I think, said things that were, it was a showstopper for sure, and it caught our attention, and it needed to. Because when we hear things that are somewhat frightening about what could happen in the future, we need to pay attention, because that's our job. We're a young state, and many young, resource-rich states make their money off of extractive industries. And that's what we've done. And that's very common. It's maybe not unhealthy, maybe it's very healthy. But what's not healthy is not to realize that that is what a youthful state does, and that those states that have matured into healthy economies are diversified. They have things that they make, they have things that they do for the world that are not based on extractive industries. And that's where we suffer here. And that's part of my understanding of what Mr. Rehm was speaking of when he wrote his article, which I assume we all read, and I'm sure we all saw different things out of it. I think the thing that I keep on thinking, and I do agree that we need a balanced financial plan, as several of the representatives have said, and that's part of the preparing for the future. But I keep thinking the simple things are the things that come back into my mind over and over to remind me what course I should take. And the one that I think of probably several times a month, at least, ever since I was a little kid, was don't put all of your eggs in one basket. And I think we need to work in this body to make sure that we keep working towards diversification. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Representative Sisson. Representative Berkowitz.
Thank you very much, Mr. Speaker. Same subject.
Without objection.
I'd like to begin by thanking the Chair of Transportation and the Co-Chair of Finance for standing up and saying nice things about the governor. But I will say that the governor made a point the other evening when he was standing just aside from you, that we need to change our course, that we need to do more, that the vital signs of the state indicate that we're doing well in some areas, but they indicate potential trouble ahead. And it's our responsibility in this body to move forward, because we all know that we'll fall behind if we just stand still. And I'm very encouraged to hear a willingness, again, from members of this body, from members of both sides of the aisle, to take the hard steps necessary to bring about a long-range fiscal plan. Without a long-range fiscal plan, we cannot provide the stability that companies want when they're making decisions to whether to do business in the state. We can't provide the stability that's necessary for good jobs for people. We can't provide the stability that's necessary to provide the quality of life, the type of education, the infrastructure that's necessary. So it's incumbent upon us to do what we did last year. And I say we because it was this body. And I have a lot of confidence in the will of this body. We are going to disagree about the course we're going to take. But leadership on this issue in the legislature will not come from the other side. leadership on this issue will come from this side. And this House, all 40 members here, from all three factions, will have the need to come together and weigh in on the public debate. All of us will have the responsibility of going forth to our constituents and soliciting their opinions, because it's our responsibility. And I am very encouraged to hear the words today that we have the will to solve the problem, and that though we were rebuffed in September, we took it as an admonishment on that particular issue, and we still have the will to go forward. So I applaud you, Mr. Speaker, the members of your majority, members of the conservative Republican majority, members of my caucus, who are going to take the steps necessary in the next 4 months to solve the state's problems.
Thank you, Mr. Minority Leader. Representative Foster.
Yes, sir. The same subject, a little different.
Without
I've got a birthday on Sunday, and I wonder if I can do it today rather than wait until next Wednesday, Mr. Speaker.
Well, without objection, please go ahead.
Yes, sir. It's my good colleague right behind my friend from Palmer. He's from District 25. And briefly, his horoscope I cut out of the paper today, Mr. Speaker, if I can read it. It says, you get a Capricorn, and it says, ask questions. Don't take it personally that statements and events make no sense. You'll find that the situation is not unique. Let the Speaker and Majority Leader help you find the right way to straighten yourself out. Today's paper. Anyway, he was born on January 16, 1939, Mr. Speaker. And it says here, when he was seven, I guess that would be 1946, his parents ran away from home. let's see, he went through the University of Washington for 5 years. And it states here that on his college football team, he was the offensive throwback. He said he had a hard time getting through college, Mr. Speaker. He had enough money for tuition, room, and board, but not enough for bail. Anyway, Mr. Speaker, let's see. He went on through mechanical engineering, graduate level courses including automatic engineering and economics. And Mr. Speaker, he adds here that he is inquisitive, knowledgeable, articulate, and incredibly well prepared. He doesn't know what his IQ is, but it's probably only a couple of points lower than yours. His second term, he got here in 1996, commercial fishing, maintenance supervisor for 12 years with British Petroleum, and he served for many years on the Alaska State Human Rights Commission, and his colleagues here state that to know him is to like him, not to know him is to love him. Special interest, Mr. Speaker. Reading, he belongs to the Page of the Month Club, and he's written a few children's books, but not on purpose. And in his statement, Mr. Speaker, he says that achieving success in this building is like climbing a gigantic mountain of moose nuggets. Just so you can pluck one perfect rose from the top, then you find after having made that hideous ascent that you've lost the sense of smell. So if you'll please stand and join me in singing happy birthday to our good friend.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear friend. Happy birthday to you.
Representative Dyson.
Thank you. It is a privilege to serve with you all. I have been impressed that I've been here, the quality of folks that are here. All of you are well-meaning and dedicated, and I've learned a great deal and have made some really good friends, and that's a privilege. I've had lots of privileges in my life. I was born in Canada, and my folks immigrated to the States when I was pretty young. We crossed the border early on Sunday morning, December 7th, 1941, and two cars behind us, they closed the border, and and it was very interesting for me. We lived on a boat in Canada, and we lived in a boat in Seattle for quite a while, and then we later moved ashore. But my father was thrilled with the, living in America and watching the sleeping giant awake to the cause of going to war. And he was just amazed at the ability of Americans with their ingenuity and to respond to whatever crisis and get after it. And I would say, and this harkens back to some earlier remarks here, that we do face some challenging times, but we, like all the generations of Americans that have gone before us, are well able to handle the challenge. And the only thing that keeps us from doing that is our unwillingness to roll up our sleeves, as America did when I was a very young man and fought two of the world's most accomplished military powers. And I believe that a great deal of what the world enjoys today is the willingness of a previous generation of Americans faced with desperate times who said, we can do it. And I believe that we Alaskans can do it as well, and I believe that there's the talent and the dedication here to be a part, perhaps a small part, but a part of that future. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Whitaker.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Just a very brief reminder, if I might, please.
Without objection.
I'm from downtown Fairbanks, and Alaska does have more than one downtown. That's the reminder.
Here, here. Are there any more special orders? Ms. Majority Leader. Thank you, Mr. Speaker. With that, I would move and ask unanimous consent that the House stand in adjournment until 11 a.m. Tuesday, January 18th.
Have a good weekend. We are adjourned.